Morning. We are in Shabbos Daf Yud Beis. We are starting today on the very bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, and we are going to be starting with the words Tanicha Delo Yetsa Azav B'Kiso. It is approximately a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. The second word in the line is Tanichada. We are coming off of a Mishnah on yesterday's Daf. If you take a look back on the Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, so the Mishnah mentioned a number of things that you cannot do as it's approaching dark, about a half an hour before Shabbos begins. So these are practices that one should not employ. And people shouldn't go out with their tools, with their professional tools, prior to Shabbos, about a half an hour before Shabbos, with the concern that they're going to forget about it, and then they're going to come and walk with it on Shabbos, carry it on Shabbos, thus by violating the malacha of Hotza'ah. The Mishnah then went on to move on to discuss other topics, which I'll highlight, and we're going to go over in more detail a little bit later on this morning. But in the meantime, the Gemara yesterday wanted to know whether or not this rabbinic prohibition of giving yourself a half an hour before Shabbos where you can't go out with your tools, is this going to be true even if it is not, let's say, a Rishus HaRabim consideration, but it was just a Karmelis consideration, meaning you're in a Rishus HaYachid, and what's outside is a Karmelis. If in fact you were to transfer from your house into the Karmelis, thereby you'd be only violating an Issa D'Rabbanan, so would there be a rabbinic prohibition of a half an hour before Shabbos safeguarding the rabbinic prohibition of Karmelis? And this is what we classically refer to as Gzera L'Gzera. And so Abaye and Rava discussed that yesterday, discussed it and disputed this matter. Abaye says that we're going to make Gzera L'Gzera. Rava says we generally don't make Gzera L'Gzera, and this is no different. We're not going to make Gzera L'Gzera over here as well. As I pointed out yesterday, really interesting Tosfos. Abaye, of course, agrees with Rava that in general you don't make Gzera L'Gzera, but perhaps over here we're discussing the Malach of Hotza'ah, so therefore Malach of Hotza'ah is going to have Gzera L'Gzera. And yesterday I suggested why that should be. But anyway, that was all what we covered in the course of yesterday. We're now picking it up right where we left off yesterday, and the Gemara over here is going to be discussing somewhat of an indelicate matter, but halachic considerations. We're talking now about Azav, so just a little bit of background information, just to get us through the upcoming Gemara. Azav is somebody who has a discharge, not a seminal discharge, that's a Balkari, but rather another type of discharge. The Gemara elsewhere describes it in terms of its physical characteristics, but basically a man who has Azav discharge is going to become Tameh. And in terms of the number of times that he have a discharge will affect the degree of tumah that he has. The first time that he has a zav discharge, so he is tameh, he's an ava tumah, but it only will affect him for one day, meaning he could tov in the mikvah, he'll experience harav shemesh, and then it'll be tar legamrei. However, if he has two discharges, so then he needs to now count shiv nekiyim, seven clean days, seven uninterrupted days where he has no Zav discharge during those 7 days. If he sees it on three successive times, so then he is now also going to have to count Shiv Nekim, obviously. Certainly no worse than someone who sees twice. And in addition to that, also is going to have to bring a Karban on the eighth day of a Chatas and an Ola. So for our Zav, so it's going to be critical for him to know whether or not he had one discharge, two discharges, or three discharges. And just going back to our days of Nida, let's just remind ourselves, it's much like a Zava, a woman who's a Zava. A notable difference, and we point this out back in Nida, is that for a Zava, so for her, sequences are going to be based on days. Meaning it's one day of discharge, a second day of discharge, and a third day of discharge. If a woman saw, let's say, multiple times in one day, that only counts as one. As opposed to a man, however, a man is not going to be divided by days. Meaning a first, a second, and even a third discharge can all be experienced on the same day. Okay. Anyway, we are going to be discussing the following. For the man who is clearly having a Zav discharge, so aside from the fact that he needs the halachic knowledge to know whether or not he had a Zav discharge at the very same time, he also doesn't want his clothing to get dirty. So what he's going to do is he's going to be wearing a pouch. It's going to be a private pouch that basically is going to be absorbing the Zav discharge. And it's really going to be accomplishing two things. One, it's going to let him know whether or not he has a Zav discharge or not for the halachic considerations that we just went through. And secondly, and quite pragmatically, he just doesn't want to get his clothing dirty. So we are going to have now a brisa, two brisas, which are going to be conflicting with one another. One brisa tells us, one brisa tells us that a zav is on Shabbos allowed to go out with a pouch. The im yatsa pater. Sorry. Let me read that again. Let me read it correctly. Lo yatsa azav b'kiso. A zav is not allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. V'im yatsa pater. But if he goes out with it, he's going to be pater aval aser. It'll be rabbinically prohibited for him to do so, but he's not going to be violating the Torah in taking it out. And another brisa, lo yatsa v'im yatsa chayv chatas. And the second brisa says that if he goes out with it on Shabbos, he's going to be chayv chatas. Now, it goes without saying that people are allowed to go out with clothing on Shabbos, wearing clothing on Shabbos. We can say it even better. It's a mitzvah to dress on Shabbos. And not only that, it's a mitzvah to dress on Shabbos different than one dresses during the rest of the week. But a malbush, anything which qualifies as clothing, obviously is not considered carrying. This pouch over here does not qualify as clothing. It is there only to inform him of his zav status, and it's there to protect that his clothing don't get dirty. But it itself doesn't qualify as clothing. If it did, then there would be simply no discussion. Fine. So that's clear. What is obviously open for a debate is the level of liability when he goes out with it on Shabbos. One brisa tells us that it's asur midrabbanan. The second brisa says that it's mamish, a full-fledged malacha d'oraisa avotzah, if he goes out with it on Shabbos. And what the Gemara is going to be doing now for a good amount of time, well into today's daf, into the first half of today's daf, and that is explaining the two sides of this machlokas. And so here we go with round one. Am Rav Yosef Lokasha ha Rabbi Meir ha Rabbi Yehuda. So the first suggestion of the Gemara is that one position subscribes to Rabbi Meir and the other one subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, as we learned in yesterday's daf, when we talk about craftsmen going out with their particular tools. Normally people don't walk around with tools, but if you're a craftsman, you go out with that particular tool, so then you are going to be chayev. And we saw yesterday a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if a person were to go out with that particular tool, so that is the normal way you carry it, even though you're not holding it in your hand, even though you're holding it, let's say, in your lapel, or the ruler's behind your ear. But if you're a professional, and that's the way you normally go out, so this would constitute an act of hotzah. And Rav Meir says no. Rav Meir says in order for something to be carrying, you have to be carrying it the way normal people carry it, meaning in your hands. So the Gemara now is suggesting that perhaps the discrepancy between the two brises is riding on whether we subscribe to Rav Meir or Rav Yehuda. And just to spell it out, according to Rav Meir, a pouch is not the normal way of carrying something. In other words, you carry something in your hand, and so therefore that would reflect the position of Pater Aval Aser. It is a shinu. It is considered a deviant way of carrying. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda, well, the pouch is normally worn in the private area, and so therefore this is considered a normal way of carrying it. It would be tantamount to a tailor walking with a needle in his lapel, and so therefore he'd be chayef. This is the Gemara's proposition of explaining the two sides of this brisa. So the Gemara says, Abaye says, I don't understand. Even in Rameir's position, he's talking about an abnormality. In other words, if a non-tailor, if I were to walk out with a needle in my jacket, it's abnormal for me. But over here, for a person to be wearing a pouch in his private area, that's normal behavior. So Abai says, let me give you an easy argument over here so that I can explain my position. Let's say I have somebody who's not much of a carpenter, but he basically digs a hole into a beam on Shabbos. So that obviously would constitute a malacha. And what are you going to argue? Well, he's not a professional, he's not a carpenter, so therefore it doesn't constitute a malacha. No. When you do an act which qualifies as a malacha, so that qualifies as a malacha. Over here, Rav Meir would tell you that if a person normally goes out wearing the pouch which is normally worn in that area, so of course that constitutes the malacha of Otsah. So even Rav Meir would say over here that you'd be chayiv a karban chatas. And over here you're going to tell me that he's not chayiv? Of course he's going to be chayiv. So, the Gemara now has left our first approach in terms of explaining the discrepancy. And so here we are now trying to figure out how do you explain the discrepancy between the two brises. So the Gemara says that maybe there is no disagreement between the two brises, but the brises' differences are basically contextual, circumstantial. And that would be as follows. According to the brisa that says that Yerchayev, that's talking about the Balkari who, the Zav who saw two times. The brisa that says Pater Aval Aser is talking about the Zav who saw already saw three times. And the Gemara goes and articulates why is that different. Maishna Zav Al Shtei Re'iyos, the Chayev, Demi Baile Lebedika. So the Gemara explains, well, because for our Zav who saw two times, so for him, it's critical for him to know whether or not he's going to have a third Zav discharge. Because with that third Zav discharge, it's going to make differences with him halachically. When he sees two times, he needs Shiva Nakim. When he sees three times, he needs to bring Karbanos. So for him, it's critical knowledge for him to know. And so therefore, when he wears his pouch out on Shabbos, so it's going to be Chayev because for him, it's important, it's critical for him to know this information. Whereas opposed to a Zav Bal Gimel, so the Gemara now is arguing, if he already saw three times, so what's now an additional Re'iyah going to provide for him? Nothing. In other words, it's not going to provide for him any new information. He already is now at the maximum Ziva stage, and so therefore, another Zav discharge won't do anything for him. So this is not critical information for him, and therefore, if he were to wear the pouch on Shabbos, he would be Pater of Alasar. So to which the Gemara pushes back on this explanation. Bal Gimel Nami, Mi Baile L'Sfira. So the Gemara says, even if you're a Bal Gimel, even if you already have three discharges, nevertheless, it's critical that you wear the pouch. Why is it critical? Because remember, after you saw three times, what do you need? Shiv Nakim. You need to count seven clean days. And so therefore, the wearing of the pouch becomes now critical halachically because you need to know whether or not this can count as one of your seven clean days. And so therefore, it is still critical for you to wear the pouch because you still need critical halachic knowledge by wearing this pouch. So the Gemara continues, so the Gemara says, well, you're right, but you can only count your first clean day after you had your Zav discharge. So maybe the Bryce is talking about a man who had three Zav discharges, where now he's at the maximum. Maybe he needs the pouch in order to count to seven clean days. He actually became a third. His third discharge arrived on Shabbos. And so therefore, at least for the remainder of Shabbos, now there's simply no reason to wear the pouch. In terms of maximum Zav, he's already there. In terms of informing him to count Shiv Nakiyim, he can't count till Sunday. He can't start counting till Sunday. And so therefore, for the remainder of the day, there's simply no reason for him to be wearing the pouch. And so therefore, that would be considered an act of hotzah. So the Gemara says, okay, Vahami Baile Kadesh Litanfu Kelav. So the Gemara says now, as much as we've been discussing up until this point in time, the reason why he's wearing the pouch in order for him to gain halachic knowledge, isn't there also another issue, which is the very pragmatic issue of he doesn't want his clothing to get dirty. And because of that, can't we make the argument now that the pouch provides a purpose for him in that he doesn't want his clothing to get dirty? And the Amr of Zera, Haitan Hud Amr, Kol Atzul Etinof Loka Chashiv. So the Gemara says, anything which is protecting your clothing is not going to be considered significant. And therefore, this is not going to be considered derech hotza'ah. We're not regarding this as a normal way that a person comes out walks out with something. Meaning, if the purpose is, if the function of the kli is only there to just simply save your clothing from getting dirty, so the author of this brisa says that's not considered significant, and therefore that is not considered an act of hotza'ah. And now what the Gemara is going to be arguing is, if a kli's function is only to protect something else, so this is not going to be significant. Did not. And here the Gemara is going to make a really big leap in that we're going to leave the world of Shabbos and Hotza. We're going to enter into an entirely different halachic realm. And the Gemara is just going to make the case that if the purpose of a kli is just to protect something else, but it doesn't have any independent function as well, so therefore it's not significant. And the Gemara is going to then borrow that idea and bring it back over here. Admittedly, the Gemara is going to now make a really big jump in terms of moving from one area of halacha to another. But the Gemara thinks that the kernel of the idea is able to be borrowed from one area of halacha to another area of halacha. And the Gemara takes us now to the area of machshirin. Now for machshirin, there's really one basic rule to know. First of all, what is machshirin? The idea behind machshirin is that a food is not going to be subject to susceptibility of tumah it won't be able to contract tuma until it first becomes comes into contact with any one of the seven liquids. The seven liquids, which the Torah itself doesn't enumerate, but the Mishnah and Machshirin, and we've gone over the numerous times, enumerates the seven liquids. When those seven liquids come into contact with the food, then and only then is the food going to be subject to susceptibility to tuma. And this is the entire idea behind Machshirin. Now, in terms of rule number one, because every time Machshirin comes up, we always go over rule number one. Rule number one is the following. In order for the food to come into contact with a liquid, there needs to be one criteria, and that is, did I want the liquid to come into contact with the food? And this is what the Gemara always describes it as, b'chi yutan. In other words, quoting the pasuk in the Torah, food only becomes susceptible when there was an interest in the food becoming wet. If there was no interest in the food becoming wet, so then, even though, despite the fact that the food came into contact with the liquid, the food is not mukhshar lekabel tuma. And the Mishnayos and Machshirin go over various circumstances and scenarios in which the liquid there was an interest in the liquid, or there was no interest in the liquid. So some of these cases seem a little bit strange, but that's basically what the Mishnayos are driving at. And here, Harei Zeh B'Chi Yutan, we're in the very bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom, at last we're in the line, and we are going to be learning a Mishnah in Machshirin together. Dinan HaKofa Kara Al HaKosel, if, let's say, I invert a bowl against a wall, Im B'Shol Shetud HaKara, Harei Zeh B'Chi Yutan. If the reason why I inverted the bowl is because currently right now, rain or any water for that matter is coming down the side of the wall, and I specifically want the bowl to get wet and rinsed with this rain, so now that is describing water that I want. I purposely want this water in order for the kli to get wet. And so, and as a result of that, when that liquid then subsequently falls on food, that liquid now is liquid that I was interested in, water that I was interested in, and therefore that will serve as hechsher. However, im bishvil shelo yilaka akotel, as now we are in the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, if we're describing something where I don't want the wall to get wet, the only reason why I inverted the kli on top of the wall is only so there was one particular area on the wall that I didn't want to get wet, and so therefore I inverted the kli on, and the whole purpose why the kli is there is only to protect that area, so ein b'chi yutan. So now that liquid that comes off of that kli, is not liquid that I was interested in. Because the only reason why I came into contact with the kli is for the one simple purpose of, I just wanted to protect that area. And what the Gemara now is trying to argue is, what have we learned from Machshirin? That if the entire purpose of a particular kli is just simply to provide protection for something else, so that is not halachically significant. And so the Gemara now is saying that the same thing is going to be true over here. If the whole purpose of the kiss, of this pouch that's worn by the Zav, is only to protect his clothing, so therefore the pouch in of itself is not halachically significant, and that would not constitute the Malach of Otsa on Shabbos. That is the Gemara's argument. Now, it is, as I pointed out in the beginning of this, it's really difficult because we are really taking a halach of Machshirin and we are applying it over here to Shabbos. And you could have made the very simple argument that the criteria and the guidelines of Machshirin are based on different criteria than that of what would violate the Malach of Otsah. You could say that, but the Gemara does not. The Gemara actually is comfortable with the comparison. What the Gemara is going to object to is simply that it doesn't really match the case of the bowl against the wall. Midam, the Gemara says, it's not comparable. Hasam lokabai lehu lahani mashkin klal. When I'm talking about inverting a bowl against the wall, and so that I'm protecting the area, so there, I don't want that liquid at all. Meaning that is a clear rejection of the liquid altogether. But over here, when the man is wearing a pouch, he wants the kiss over there in order to collect the ziva. And as Rashi over here articulates the Gemara's point, over here, in the case of our man wearing the pouch, so what is the question going on? The question is not going on the discharge itself that's coming out of the man. The question is going on whether or not this pouch is serving as an act of hotzah or not an act of hotzah by him wearing the pouch. So, and you can't compare it to the case of Machshirin simply because in the case of Machshirin, what's our focus on? Our focus isn't on the kli. Our focus is on, I simply don't want that water to come into contact with that wall. The kli over there is just a means of preventing the water coming into contact with the wall. But the question isn't going on the kli. The question is going on the water and whether or not the water has the status of machshirin or does not have the status of machshirin. Over here in our discussion, the question is whether or not the pouch constitutes otzah. So the Gemara says really the cases are not comparable. The analogy would have been fine, but the cases themselves are not comparable. In fact, the Gemara continues. If anything, we're going to compare it to another case in Machshirin, and that is the very next Mishnah Machshirin. Let's say I have a bowl, and the bowl is not inverted, and the bowl now is in its normal position collecting the rainwater. Obviously, any water that now fell into the bowl is going to be mukhshar lekabel tumah, as I want that liquid that fell into the bowl. Now, any water that bounces from the bowl outside of the bowl, so that water does not have the status of bichiyutan. That water is not going to be a machshir. It's only the liquid that goes into the bowl and stays in the bowl. So, and the Gemara just simply makes this point, ushebetocha reza bichiyutan. The Mishnah didn't say it, but it's clear from the Mishnah, and the Gemara is just simply emphasizing this point, that any liquid that's in the bowl is now going to be in the status of bichiyutan. Now the Gemara says, now that of course is more comparable to our case over here, meaning as the pouch is being worn by the man, so it's being worn in order to collect the Zav, so that now is comparable to the Mishnah that we just learned together. And we see clearly that when it is serving to collect a liquid, so now that object now becomes significant. Now again, it's the same point. In the Mishnah Machshirin, we're focusing on the liquid. In our discussion over here, we're focusing on the pouch. But the point is still going to be that you see that when it's there for the purposes of collection, so then it becomes significant. So we see that by Machshir, and we see that over here. So the Gemara now is still at an impasse, meaning we have now two conflicting brises. One brisa says that when a Zav walks out with a pouch on Shabbos, so he didn't violate the Malach of Otzah. Patar v'alasar, it's also midrabanan, but he didn't violate the Malach of Otzah. Masha'inkein, the second brisa says that when a Zav goes out with a pouch on Shabbos, so it is a malach of otzah. And we have now tried once, twice, two times now to explain the discrepancy between the two brisas. The Gemara has so far arrived at an impasse. So Ella, by Verava, Damar Tavai lo Kasha. So the Gemara now is going to be giving its third and accepted approach. And that is, Abai and Rava both say that there's no discrepancy over here. I'm sorry. There is a discrepancy, but there is an explanation. And that is, HaRabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon. The difference between the two brises is just simply a reflection of the opinions of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. And here now, for a second time in our Masechta, we already went over this on Daf Gimel, and now we're doing this again on Daf Yud Beis. And now we are reintroducing ourselves to the topic of Malach HaShein Esrich LeGufa. What is the topic of Malach HaShein Esrich LeGufa? So that is that in order to violate a Malacha successfully on Shabbos, right, you don't want to do that, but in order to violate the Malacha successfully, so the Malacha has to be done LeGufa, for its purpose. Now, what exactly that means? So we're going to be discussing this numerous times in the course of our Masechta, and that is that it's a debate exactly what that means, that a Malacha, in order for it to be a violation of Shabbos, it has to be done LeGufa. It has to be done for its purpose. So the easiest way to say it, and Tosaf says it, is that in order to violate the malacha, it has to be done in the same manner that it was done in the Mishkan. All 39 malachas, all 39 creative activities on Shabbos is going to be platformed based on the 39 activities that were done in order to assemble the Mishkan. And so therefore, if I'm doing any of these activities, any of these malachas, with the same purpose in mind that it was done in the Mishkan, so then it would be a violation of Shabbos. If, let's say, it was a malacha she'ina tzrich legufa, where I'm not doing it for that same purpose, I'm doing it for a different purpose, so then it's a malacha she'ina tzrich legufa. Now, a malacha she'ina tzrich legufa, is that a Torah violation or is that not a Torah violation? And that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says a malacha she'ina tzrich legufa is still chayev. Rabbi Shimon says a malacha she'ina tzrich legufa is pater aval asur. And most Rishonim paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Interesting, the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, that was a crash course in Malacha Shein Esrich Legufa. If I can, just give a simple example of some classic examples of Malacha Shein Esrich Legufa. So the Gemara later on is going to give the classic example of, let's say, I dig a hole in the ground, not because I want the hole. Meaning that in the Mishkan, they dug a hole in the ground, in order so that they could plant into the ground. So you're digging in order to make a hole in the ground. Let's say I'm digging a hole in the ground just simply because I want the dirt. That is a classic example of amlacha shein esricha legufa. So I did exactly what they did, but not for its original purpose, not for the purpose that was done in the Mishkan. And so, what would the halacha be? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a malacha shein esricha legufa, but you're chayev. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's a malacha shein esricha legufa, and therefore you're patur. Now, over here, the wearing of the pouch. The wearing of the pouch on Shabbos. So this now qualifies as a malacha shein esricha legufa. Meaning, you're not wearing this pouch because you're wearing it as an article of clothing. That part is clear. And the only reason why you're wearing the pouch over here is only so that the zav discharge is not gonna dirty your clothing. This is now you are carrying, but not in order to get an item from point A to point B. You are carrying it just simply in order to in order so that your clothing doesn't get dirty. So this is what the purpose of otzah is. The purpose of otzah is to move an item from point A to point B. And so therefore, it's a malacha shein esricha legufa. Now, where do we stand on that? So it's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And now, it just simply is a perfect way of reflecting the two braisas. The braisa says that your chayev for wearing the pouch on Shabbos is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. The braisa that says it's patar of alasar is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, of Rabbi Shimon. Ad kan. That takes us through our first sugya of today's daf. Admittedly, the first sugya of today's daf was very challenging. It was a difficult traverse in that we tried to explain two different braisas, arriving at two different conclusions, and the Gemara made three rounds of trying to explain it, and the Gemara was satisfied with this third round of Abai and Rava, saying it's just simply a reflection of the machlokus of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Tandebe Rabbi Shmuel, we continue in today's daf. I'll say parenthetically, it gets a lot easier. Tandebe Rabbi Shmuel, Yosei Adam B'Tfilin B'Erev Shabbos Simcha Sheicha. Now, all the craftsmen that we learned in yesterday's daf in the Mishnah cannot go out with their tools about a half an hour before Shabbos for fear that they're going to forget about it and end up carrying it on Shabbos itself. And the Gemara now is going to point out that the same thing is not true regarding your tefillin. Meaning your tefillin you can wear all the way up to when Shabbos begins. Now when Shabbos actually begins, so you have to take off your tefillin. I know we all know this, but just as a simple reminder, back in the day, they wore their tefillin all day. They wore their tefillin from morning until evening. Now, if they wear their tefillin into a regular weekday evening, so the Gemara elsewhere talks about how if it's on already, you don't have to take it off, but you're not allowed to put it on at night. But of course, on Shabbos, the consideration is that on Shabbos is not Zman Tefillin, meaning on Shabbos, you're not allowed to wear tefillin. So maybe there should also be a concern that if I'm wearing my tefillin half an hour before nighttime, so I'm going to forget about it and therefore end up wearing it on Shabbos itself. So the Gemara says, quoting a braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, not a concern. A person can wear his tefillin all the way up to the very last minute before Shabbos. My time it came to Amar Rabba bar Rav Huna, chayv ad lamamash mish betefillin kol shav v'shah, because we know the halach is that when you're wearing tefillin, you always have to be conscientious of the tefillin that you're wearing. You have to be adjusting your tefillin all the time. Now, adjustment of the tefillin all the time serves twofold. One, it's always a reminder, it's a constant reminder that you're wearing it. And two, it shifts out of place and you want to make sure to get it right back into the same place. But you got to be doing it at all times while you're wearing it. And we know because Kavachamah Mitzitz, and we know this because it's based on a logical argument based on the tzitz worn by the Kohen Gadol. The tzitz, the head plate worn by the Kohen Gadol. So ma tzitz she'ein bo ela askara achas amar Torah. Now the tzitz has how many Shem Hashems on it? One. The tzitz has the inscription of Kodesh LaHashem that's etched into the tzitz. And so it says Hashem's name one time. And meanwhile, the Torah says, Amar Torah v'haya al mitzcho tamid, that it has to be on his head at all times, meaning not just only physically, but he has to be aware of it of all times. Shelo yasich da tomi menu. So tefillin sheyesh bo askaras harbi alachas kama v'chama. So when it comes to your tefillin, where it has how many Shem Hashem on the tefillin. Now, on the actual tefillin itself, so as we've gone over numerous times, it actually has Shem Hashem, as the Shin, the Dalet, and the Yud on the actual tefillin itself. We've gone over this numerous times. But even in the tefillin, you have, of course, all the Klapim and the Parshios. And the Parshios has how many times Shem Hashem numbered. So I didn't do the count, but obviously it's a lot. And the point is that if the Kohen Gadol, who's wearing an article of clothing with one Shem Hashem on it, has to be aware of it at all times. How much more so regarding tefillin? So hilkach, and now the Gemara just simply finishes the point, mitgar dakir lehu. So because you're always going to have a constant awareness of the tefillin that you're wearing, so therefore you're not going to forget about your tefillin, and you can wear it all the way up to the very end of Friday, up to the very beginning of Shabbos. Of course, once Shkia comes, once sunset comes, so the tefillin has to be taken off right before sunset. But there is no precaution that's necessary regarding tefillin. Another halacha. This one we all know. Chananya Omer chayav adam mamashvash bebigdo be'erev Shabbos im chashecha. A person has to check his pockets right before Shabbos to make sure that nothing is in his pockets. Because the concern obviously is that you start walking around Friday night and you realize, oh, no, I have something in my pocket. And then it becomes a bit of a halachic mess, let's say it. It's a halachic mess in terms of when you find something in your pocket, what do you do with that item that's in your pocket? The item is a muksa item, a non-muksa item. What kind of pocket is it? What else is in the pocket? There's a lot of halachic consideration. Forgive me for not going through it right now. But as a preventative, an ounce of prevention over here would just simply be check your pockets before Shabbos to make sure that you have nothing in your pockets. And now this becomes famous because in Sidurim, in Ashkenazic Sidurim, so this was attached right between Mincha and Maariv and Shabbos. It was added on right after the Mishnayos that we say the second parak of Shabbos Mishnayos. And then we also, the Mesader HaSidur, whoever put this Siddur together, so they included this line of Gemara. And Amar Rav Yosef Hilchos Rabba Sela Shabbos. This is a really big halacha when it comes to Shabbos. Meaning this little ounce of prevention is going to prevent a lot of Shabbos transgression. So Rav Yosef wants to accentuate how important it is. And whoever put our Siddurim together, they realized how important this is. And so therefore they added it to our Siddurim. We are now going to go back to the Mishnah. Moving now to the next point of the Mishnah. You go back to yesterday's daf, go to the bottom of Yeralf Amud Aleph. After the Mishnah told us that you're not allowed to go out with the tools before Shabbos, already half an hour before Shabbos, the tools should go away. So then the Mishnah gives us two other halachas as well. Lo yikare, I'm reading the Mishnah. Lo yikare la'or aner, sorry, let me back up one line. Lo yafle es kelav. A person is not allowed to delouse his clothing, and lo yikare la'or haner. And you're not allowed to read by candlelight, and this is talking about on Shabbos. Both these activities are talking about on Shabbos. Now, delousing, so what's the concern over there? So that's what the Gemara wants to discuss right now. Because it's not really clear in the Mishnah what the concern is. Now, reading by the candlelight, the Mishnah was very concerned, very clear about the concern. Because what's going to happen when you're reading by candlelight? So as you're reading by candlelight, what's going to end up happening is that you don't have enough illumination. You're going to want to increase the light. And so you're going to tilt your lamp in order to get more oil into the wick in order to increase the light. And being that we're talking about it's on Shabbos itself, that would be a violation of being mavir. And so the Chachamim said, in order to safeguard that one doesn't do that, so one's not allowed to read by the candle. The Mishnah already taught us an exception for this would be, an exemption would be the Rebbe teaching his children or teaching students, where they're going to be reading by the candlelight. They're not going to touch it out of fear of the Rebbe. The Rebbe's not going to touch it because he's not the one who's actually reading. We learned that back in the Mishnah. But anyway, in terms of delousing the clothing, what's the concern over there? Now, I'll give you two options, and we'll see the Gemara trying to ascertain which is the more correct option. One option would be is that during the process of delousing, so as you're removing the louse out of the clothing, you're going to end up killing the louse. And killing an animal on Shabbos is a malacha. One of the 39 malachas is shechita. One's not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. And so perhaps the delousing over here would be a function of, would be a malacha of shechita. That's one possibility. Another possibility would be is that the delousing requires good illumination, and basically it goes back to the same issue of reading. Meaning by reading, the concern is going to be is that you're going to want to tilt the lamp. So maybe for delousing, you're going to put it right up against the lantern, and you don't have enough light, and you're going to end up tilting the lantern in order to get more light. That could be the other consideration, and the Gemara wants to know which of these two seems to be the more correct way to understand the delousing. So lo yafles kelav ibailu, lo yafles kelav biyom shema yaharog. So the Gemara is now going to spell out what I already just said. One consideration is that you're going to end up killing the louse. Rabbi Eliezer, Yiditanya, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Hari Kinnig B'Shabbos Ki'ilu Horei Gamal. According to Rabbi Eliezer, there is no difference between killing a louse versus killing a camel. They're both creatures, and the killing of a camel would constitute a malacha of shechita. And so the same thing is true regarding killing a louse. And so therefore, the issue of delousing is that I may end up killing the louse. And lo yikare lo or ner shamiyata. And as far as not reading by candlelight on Friday night, the issue is that I'm going to tilt the lamp, as we just described. That's one way to understand the Mishnah. Odilma tarvayu shamiyata. Or maybe no. Maybe both of these issues is that I may end up tilting the lamp. As reading is because you're putting the book right up against the lamp and I don't have enough light and I'm going to tilt it. And the same thing could be true regarding delousing, that I don't have enough light and I'm moving it now towards the lamp in order to get more light, and I'm going to end up tilting the lamp. So Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's consider answering this question by critically reading. So Tashma, in Poland, in Korin, Loranero. So I have a Braisa. Now, the Braisa is not exactly the same as the Mishnah, but it's making the same points. And that is that one is not allowed to delouse, and one is not allowed to read by the light of the lamp. And the Gemara is assuming right now that this Braisa is informative, because the Braisa puts these two activities right next to the words L'or Haner. And so therefore it sounds like the concern is that I may end up tilting the lamp. The Gemara is not impressed. Mi Alima Mi Masnisen. It's true that the wording of the Braisa is a little bit different than the Mishnah, but so what? The Braisa didn't say clearly that the concern for both is because I may tilt the lamp. There may be two different concerns. For delousing, maybe the concern is I may end up killing the louse. And for reading, the concern is I'm going to tilt the lamp. So the Gemara says, basically, I'm unimpressed. Let's move on to a different Braisa. Tashma. In Poland, Lor Haner, in Korban, Lor Haner. So here in this Braisa, the wording is actually more instructive. Because in this Braisa it says, Ein Polen l'or haner. And Ein Korin l'or haner. Rashi points out over here, since we have the words l'or haner attached to both activities, it's clear now from this Braisa that the concern is that I may end up tilting the lamp for both of these activities. Elim in halacha shamar baliyas Chananya ben Chizkia ben Garon. And these are some of the halachas that were taught in the attic of Chananya ben Chizkia. Now, it happens to be that in tomorrow's daf, we're going to introduce ourselves to this idea of the addict of Chananya ben Chizkia. So we're going to go over that tomorrow. Shmamina to Tavar Shamayata Shmamina. So the Gemara concludes that, yes, both of these activities is out of rabbinic concern that I may end up tilting the lamp. I'm Rabbi Rama Shmuel Afilu Lahavchim Bein Bigdola Bigdei Ishto. Other activities that you're not allowed to do by lamp on Shabbos is to see whose clothing it is. Now, I know this is going to sound funny, but back in the day, there wasn't much difference between what men's clothing looked like and women's clothing looked like. Basically, it was toga and toga. His toga, her toga. And the differences between the male toga and the female toga were extraordinarily subtle. So subtle that if on Friday night you had to go back to the closet to get a new article of clothing, so you needed light. So here is another thing that you're not allowed to do by candlelight, and that is to make it to see the difference between whether it's his toga or her toga. Again, the differences back then were extraordinarily subtle, and so therefore you need a lot of light, and so therefore now we go right back to the concern, I may end up tilting the lamp in order to see whether it's his or hers. So Amar Rav Lo Amar Ela D'Bnei Mechuza. So Rav says that's true, but in the style in which they wore in the city. Aval D'Bnei Chiklasa Mediade. So the Gemara says, but if we're talking about out in the field, out in the farms, in the rural areas, so there, his toga, her toga were significantly different, and therefore I didn't need a lot of light, and therefore the rabbinic concern doesn't apply under those circumstances. Udibnei Mechuza Nami Lo Amar Ela D'Zekenos. And the Gemara points out that the subtle differences between his and her in the city is only for older people. Aval diyaldos me diyade. But for the younger people, so there was a stark difference between what his toga looked like and her toga looked like, and so therefore there was no concern that I may end up tilting the lamp because the differences were really clear. Tana Rabbanan in Poland, Bereshus HaRabim Nei Kavod. Now, as long as we talked about delousing, the Gemara now is going to be talking about other halachas regarding delousing. This is not Shabbos related, this is just general conduct that one should not be doing in public. And that is, don't delouse in public. Bimnei HaKavod, because it's disgusting. And basically, you want to, I don't know what to file this under in terms of just being a mensch, but, you know, that's Musar, and obviously the Musar is good, but in terms of what Isser in the Torah this falls under, but be a mensch. And so therefore, delousing in public is really offensive. In other words, it's activity that you need to do, but you don't have to do it in public. And so therefore, don't do it in public. And kayotze bo, am Rav Yehuda, v'am ila am Rav Nechemia, in usim apiktizim v'rishos rabim. So there was a drink that they wore, the drink that they drank in order to induce vomiting. So once again, under certain circumstances, you have to induce vomiting. Just don't do it in the public. It's really unseemly. Mimnei akavod. And again, just behavior that you should engage in the public. Tana rabbanan maflas kelav mola v'zorek uvavash lo yarog. Now the Bryce over here is describing a ways in which one would be able to delouse on Shabbos. So amaflas kelav mola v'zorek. So what you could do is you can rub them in your fingers, meaning don't squeeze them to kill them, but just simply rub them in your fingers, and presumably this disables the louse, and then basically cast them aside. Uvavash lo yarog, but don't kill the louse. Abishal amar nota v'zorek uvavash lo yimlo. Abishal is of the opinion that you can throw them aside, but you can't even rub them. And Amar Rav Huna alacha mala v'zorek v'zeu kvodo afilu b'chol. And Rav Huna says that what you could do is that you can rub them and you can discard them, and zehu kvodo. And this is its honor. Ve'afil b'chol, and you can even do it during the week as well. Rabba mekatelahu. And Rabba would kill them. Now, it is not clear at this point in time in the Gemara whether or not Rabba is talking about during the week, or is Rabba talking about on Shabbos. And if you look at the last Tosos on our Amud, so Tosos writes, Mefarash Rifa b'chol, v'kai ad Rav Huna. So Rabba says that we're talking about during the week, and it's going it's going back on what Rav Huna says in terms of behavior that one shouldn't be doing in public. But Tosos points out that's not Rashi's explanation. Rashi says it's talking about even on Shabbos. In fact, you can see our Rashi right here on our daf who says it, and he's saying that you can kill it even on Shabbos. So Rabba Mekatelu, Rav Sheshes Mekatelu. So we have Amoraim who give full dispensation to kill the louse on Shabbos. Now, why isn't this an act of Shechita? I'll come back to that in just a moment. Rav Shadu L'Kana D'Maya. Rabba would throw it into a bucket of water. Amla Rav Nachman Levante Ketulin V'Ashmin Le'Kala D'San Vasi. And Rav Nachman says to his daughters, I want you to kill the louse, and I want my enemies to be destroyed. Apparently, Rav Nachman had a real distaste for these lice, and so he liked to hear them being killed. Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following verse: Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer Ein Organes Es Ha Ma'achols B'Shabbos Divrei Beis Shammai. One is not allowed to kill the louse, the lice on Shabbos, according to Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel Matirin, and Beis Hillel says that it is mutter. V'chein Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, before we go to the next halacha. And so now the Gemara over here explains that it's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether one is allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos. Now, the position of Beis Hillel is that it would be permissible. Now, the reason why, so the Gemara over here does not articulate why that would be acceptable. Take a look at the Rashi over here. Rashi is four lines from the bottom of the Amud. Matirin, Kedem HaFarash Shammai, Perek Shmon Shratzim. So Rashi quotes a Gemara that we're going to be seeing later on in the Masechta. Elim Adamim, the Mishkan. Now, in terms of what animals were killed in the Mishkan in order to build the Mishkan, so it was Elim Adamim. So it was red rams. Elim Parim V'Rabim. And we're describing animals which go through. Now I'm going to describe it the way Rashi is describing it: sexual reproduction. Afkolsha par v'rava. Now that is the Gemara's perception as it relates to animals. However, when it comes to lice, vikina ena par v'rava, ela mi besar adam hi sharetes. And the Gemara over here speaks about some form of a spontaneous generation of the lice, and because they reproduce in this manner and not through sexual reproduction. So therefore, it is not going to be a violation of Shabbos if one were to kill them on Shabbos. That is the way the Gemara explains it later on. Now, obviously, it's not consistent with what we now know. We now know nowadays regarding the reproduction of the lice. And even though the Gemara spells it out in this manner, it could just simply be that the Gemara is making a distinction regarding animals where it's clear that they go through sexual reproduction, as opposed to animals that are so small that to the naked eye, it doesn't look like it's going through sexual reproduction. That could be a simple way of understanding the Gemara, not that the Gemara itself is giving any kind of scientific explanation of what sexually reproduces what versus what does not. Okay. Anyway, coming back now to our Gemara, so the Gemara concludes that according to Beis Hillel, one's allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos, and the Amoraim took different measures in terms of whether one should do so actively, passively, just simply disable it and put it aside. Okay. We continue in the Gemara. We're on the very bottom of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. One is not allowed to make a shidduch for his son or daughter on Shabbos. One is not allowed to hire a Rebbe on Shabbos for his son, or to teach him a profession. And one is not allowed to come for the morning. And one is not allowed to do Bikur Chol on Shabbos. And all these positions, Divrei Beis Shammai. These are all the opinion of Beis Shammai. But Beis Hillel matirim, but Beis Hillel says in all these circumstances that it would be mutter. Meaning every one of the activities that we just mentioned above would be mutter. One is allowed to create shidduchim. Now create shidduchim over here, just so that we understand a little bit better. Shidduchim doesn't just simply mean matchmaking. Meaning it does, but it's not just that. It's talking about the financial arrangements. In other words, we're talking about families that are getting together in order to match their children. And they're talking more than just... Right, what's his likes, what's her likes, is it going to be a good match? The conversations are more serious than that. They're financial, meaning how much are you contributing to kickstart the marriage, how much are you contributing, etc., talking about actual financial arrangements. And even though obviously talking about money on Shabbos is prohibited, but for the purpose of shidduchim, so it is permitted. And also the contracting of a rebbe and the contracting of to teach your son a profession. So these are mitzvos, and even though again finances and Shabbos are aser, but if it's for the purpose of a mitzvah, so then it would be mutter. Also, a nicham avelim bikur cholim, which we're going to be discussing now in more detail. So they are allowed on Shabbos. Tana rabbanan, a nichnas levakar tzachola. So when someone goes and visits the sick, and he does so, now we have the words omer Shabbos, but bis Shabbos. So, and he's visiting on Shabbos. So, what should you say on Shabbos? So, here's what you should say. Shabbos imalizok refuah korvalavo. That Shabbos is a time where we are going to be protected from Shabbos is a time that we're not allowed to scream out. And the refuah should come quickly. Meaning it's basically an acknowledgement that we shouldn't be asking for our request on Shabbos. At the same time, however, there's an understanding that right now you need a refuah. Rameir Omer Yecholihi Shetirachim. And Rameir says it a little bit differently. It's the same basic idea, but he says it a little bit differently. If you honor Shabbos correctly, so it will have compassion upon you. Meaning, Kadosh Baruch Hu will have compassion upon you. As we now turn to the Amud Beis, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Amakim Yerachim Alecha V'Acholi Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda's formulation is slightly different. Akash Baruch Hu should have rachmanis upon you and on all the sick people, all the Jewish sick people. Rabbi Yossi Amar Amakim Rachim Alecha B'toch Chole Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi's formulation is just slightly different amongst Chole Yisrael. Shevna Yishu Yerushalayim Bechnisa So Omer. Shevna, when he was an important person in Yerushalayim at the time. So when he would go visit somebody who was sick, so when he would enter, he would say Shalom. And if he would see So Omer, Shabbasim Lezuk, Urufu Krovalavo, Verachma Merubim, Vishifto B'Shalom. Okay, so that would be his formulation. So again, the Tanaim have different formulations. The Gemara obviously feels it's important that we see all the different formulations. The Gemara continues, Gemara Azla Hadam Rabbi Chanina Mishish Lochol Besoch Beso Tzarech Shiyarven Besoch Chole Yisrael. So when you have somebody who's sick in your house, so don't just daven for him, but daven for him amongst Chole Yisrael. So Kamanka Rabbi Yossi. So that follows like the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, which we just saw on the top of the Amud, where his formulation was Besoch Yisrael. Am Rabbi Chanina Bekoshi Yitir Lanachim Avelim. So with great difficulty did the Chachamim allow for Nichim Avelim Levakar Cholim B'Shabbos. meaning Nichum Avelim and Bikur Cholim. So they're important, they're mitzvahs, but they also make an individual very sad. The person, obviously, who is an Avel and who is sick, so it goes without saying that he's sad. But even the visitor now is going to be brought down because he's visiting. So there's a tension over here. On one hand, on Shabbos, we're supposed to enjoy Shabbos. We're supposed to be relaxing on Shabbos. On the other hand, that person needs a visit. So the Chachamim realizes tension, and so that's what the Gemara says, Bikoshi. It was with difficulty that they allowed it, but they did allow it. So when I went around to see how people were doing, how sick people were doing, sometimes I would say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should visit you and so that you should come to a more peaceful place. And sometimes I would use the word Yad Kerecha. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember you. So, now the Gemara says, now, aren't you not allowed to petition in the Aramaic language? And here we get to a really interesting Gemara that's going to be very difficult for me to explain. And that is that when you are davening, you should be davening B'Lashon B'Kodesh, not B'Lashon Arami. Now, why should that be? So, the basic understanding of the Gemara is that, and you can see the Rashi, the Malach Hashares is needed to help bring your tefillos up to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and so they have an understanding of Lashon HaKodesh. They don't have an understanding of Lashon HaRami. Okay? Can I explain it any better? So I wish I could. I'm not in a position where I can explain it any better, but meanwhile, that's the Gemara's assumptions. And so therefore, the Gemara is just wondering, how can you ask and petition on behalf of the Chola in Aramaic, when meanwhile those tefillos presumably won't go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? V'amar Rav Yochanan kol ha'shol tzorach b'lashon arami em alach ha'asher es nizkakin lo. And the Gemara says it straight out, that when you ask in Lashon HaRami in Aramaic, so the Malachi Asharis do not understand it. Shei Malachi Asharis makirim Lashon HaRami. They don't understand. They don't understand Lashon HaRami. So the Gemara says Shani Chola d'shchina imo. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but that's only if the tefillos need to be sent to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Over here, when you have a Chola, the tefillos don't have to be sent to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why? So the Gemara introduces us over here to a very powerful idea, and that is when you have a Chola, the Shechina is right with the Chola. So how do I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally feeds the Chola? All right, supports the Chola, is right there with the Chola. The Pasuk in Tehillim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is right there by the Chola. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Somebody goes and visits the Chola. Lo yishev al gabei amita. So should not be sitting on the bed. Velo al gabei kisei. And not in the chair, elamit ateif. Now, the reason why, again, is because based on the idea that we just learned together, that the assumption is that the Shechina is right there right by the side of the Chola. By you sitting right opposite his head, so that's an affront to the Shechina. What should you do? Elamit ateif yosha lefanav. What you should do is wrap yourself up out of honor of the Shechina. We just saw this a couple days ago, when the Dayanim would be sitting in judgment. So we assume that that's also a circumstance in which the Shechina is right there. And so we learned that instructions for the Dayanim is to wrap themselves up. Me'emas HaShechina. Same thing over here. When you're visiting the sick, so you should do Ituf out of Emas HaShechina. Me'emnei SheShechina L'malam Me'erosh Yosav. I'm sorry. V'yoshev L'fanav. And you should be sitting in front of him and not sitting opposite his head on the bed. Me'emnei SheShechina L'malam Me'erosh Yosav SheChola. The Shechina is right there by the head of the Chola. She'namar. Hashem Yisraelin al Eres Davai. Kadosh Baruch Hu is feeding, he's supporting the Chola, and the Gemara requotes the Pasuk in Tehillim. Lo yikare la'or haner. We now go back to the Mishnah and discuss the Gzera d'Rabbanan, not to read by candlelight. And Amar Rav afilu gavosh de'kamos. And even if the candle is much higher than where we are currently situated, But you think to yourself, I can't even reach the lantern. It's so far above me. So therefore, for me, there's no concern. So to that, the Gemara says no. The Gzera d'Rabbanan would apply anytime you're reading by candlelight. Ve'afilu shtei marda'os, and even if it is higher, if it's two saddles higher than you. Ve'afilu asar batim zu agav zu, and even if it's 10 houses one above the other. Chadu d'lo likre hatrei shapir dami. So the Gemara right now suggests, well, maybe if there are two people reading together, that would be fine, because they would remind one another that you're not allowed to tilt the lamp. So the Gemara, however, points out that we have a brisa that says, not one, not two people. So Amar Rebbe Elazar, Lo Kasha Kam Minyanecha, Kam B'Shnei Inyanim. So the Gemara gives an answer, and the Gemara says, if they're learning the same thing, so they're actually team working, so then it would be okay, because then they're going to remind one another. But if they're each reading their own sefer, and they're not learning together, but they're learning separately together, so then they're not going to partner and cooperate in terms of reminding one another not to tilt the lamp. Amar Rav Huna v'madura afilo asar b'nei adam asar. Now, when it comes to a madura, a very large fire, they're going to be sitting so far apart from one another, so they don't have this cooperation that we just described. Amar Rav im adam chashuv hu muter. Rav says that for an adam chashuv, it would be permissible. Why is a dispensation given out to an adam chashuv? Because he's an adam chashuv, so therefore he doesn't adjust the lamp. It is, we could say it, it's beneath him to engage in that kind of activity. That activity is not designated for an adam chashuv. So meizvei lo yikar lo aner shemiyate. The Gemara challenges based on a brisa. The brisa says that one is not allowed to read by candlelight, by lantern. I'm Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha ani ekra v'lo ateh. Now Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha says, look, I'm confident that I will be in a total state of awareness and that I will not come to tilt the lamp on Shabbos. And seemingly, he violated the rabbinic decree, feeling that for him it was not a concern. Pamachas karo bikesh la'atos. So in one version of the story, he was reading by candlelight on Friday night, and he caught himself about to tilt the lamp. Amar kama gadolim divrei chachamim shehayu omer lo yikar lo aron ner. And and his response was, I am humbled and realized how significant the words of the Chachamim were, meaning that their gzeira derabanan were conscientiously designed, super considered, and it was my fault for thinking that I can think beyond them. Rabbi Nassan omer kara vehita. Now Rabbi Nassan has a different version of the story in which it wasn't that he was about to adjust the lamp, he actually adjusted the lamp. Now, obviously, he did so in a state of shogeg. He forgot that it was Shabbos momentarily, and so therefore he violated Shabbos b'shogeg. And to him, it crushed him. Because of Alpinkaso, now he wrote on a ledger. He had a personal ledger, and he wrote on it, Cheshbon HaNefesh. He's taking now an accounting. And Anishma ben Elisha, Karitha v'itesi, ner b'Shabbos. So I read, and I actually tilted the lamp. And when I go to the Beis HaMikdash, not only am I going to bring a carbon, but it's going to be a nice, healthy carbon. Meaning, I owe a carbon chatas to the Beis HaMikdash, and he wrote it down in his ledger. I'm Rabbi Abi Shani Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Now, let's remind ourselves. The Gemara is quoting this because we said that for an Adam Chashev, who normally doesn't tilt a lamp in general, so for him there is no Gzera Derabanan. The Gemara now is bothered because we just saw a story with Elisha, and the Gemara is, of course, assuming that he's an Adam Chashev. And the Gemara's answer, Amar of Abba, Shani Rabbi Shema ben Elisha, Ho Umesim Atzmal, Divrei Torah, Kehejo. And the Gemara says that, well, when it comes to Torah, he makes himself out to be like a Hedyo. Meaning to say that, for the sake of learning Torah, he basically subdues himself, and he doesn't give himself any importance while learning. And so during that period of time, he's not an Adam Chashev. Let's quickly recap our morning. Our first task this morning was to go through the two brises about the Zav wearing the pouch on Shabbos and whether that constitutes a Malacha Votza on Shabbos. One brisa says it does, the other brisa says Patar Val Aser. And the discrepancy between them, to make a long Gemara short, in other words, summarizing, the two brises are just simply reflecting the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda regarding Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Rabbi Yehuda says Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is Chayev. Him carrying the pouch on Shabbos is a Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. He's not wearing the pouch to bring it from point A to point B. He's just wearing it in order to either the halachic consideration of learning whether he's a Zav, or just simply for the protection of his clothing, but he's not wearing it to get it from point A to point B. It's a Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Rabbi Yehuda L'Shita So says that still is a Malacha D'Araisa, and therefore you'd be Chayef if you did so. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, Pater Aval Aser. It's rabbinically prohibited, but not a Malacha. Then we moved on to discuss other areas of halacha. We talked about checking your clothing before Shabbos, an ounce of prevention to make sure you don't end up carrying on Shabbos. We talked about delousing. The Gemara spent a good part of the Amud Aleph of today's daf describing delousing. What is the concern? There are two possibilities. One is that you're going to end up killing the louse, which according to Rabbi Eliezer is a malacha. Or the second concern is that you're going to need a lot of light in order to see the louse, and you may end up tilting the lamp. The Gemara favored the second explanation over the first explanation. Killing a louse on Shabbos, is that permissible? Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says it's permissible. According to Beis Hillel, a louse is a different type of creature than that of a regular animal, a lim adamim. And so therefore, killing it on Shabbos does not violate a malacha. We went over that this morning as well. The Gemara talked about other activities which are permitted on Shabbos. Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And according to Beis Hillel, one is allowed to do the mitzvahs of Bikur Cholam Nechama Velim, even though it's going to produce sadness on Shabbos, but nevertheless, for the need of the Cholam, for the need of the Avel, the Chachamim allowed it. The Gemara also allowed the hiring of a Rebbe or someone who's going to teach your son a profession on Shabbos as well. Those are mitzvahs. And even though there is a financial aspect to it, but still, it's the performance of a mitzvah, and therefore it would be okay. And what exactly do you say when you go into the house of a chola? The Gemara gave us a number of different girsos, as we now are on the Amud Beis, summarizing the Amud Beis. In terms of Nechama Velim, the Gemara also acknowledged that the Chachamim allowed it, but Bekoshi. Gemara introduced us to a powerful idea that when somebody's sick, the Shekhinah is right there. As a result of that, the Gemara says, number one, you can make any request in any language, even though in order for request to get to Kadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be said Balashon HaKodesh. But for the Shekhinah where the sick person, for the sick person where the Shekhinah is right there, so you can be asking even Bechol Lashon, even in any language. On top of that, it also tells us that because the Shekhinah is there, you can't sit by the head of the Chola. You have to be wrapped up. You have to be dressed appropriately. You have to be and you have to be sitting by the by the side of the chola, not by his head. The Gemara quotes that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is zan es chola, based on the pasuk of Hashem Yisadin al Eretz Davai. And finally, the last thing we did is go further into this gzeirah derabanan of reading by candlelight. Even if the lantern is far away from where you are, still it's going to be usur. A couple of dispensations the Gemara gave. One is that if a pair are learning the same thing together by candlelight, so there is a dispensation. Two, for an Adam Chashuv, there's a dispensation. And even though the Gemara at the end quotes Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who is an Adam Chashuv, and yet he either was about to tilt the lamp or he actually tilted the lamp as Shogeg, but the Gemara says that when it comes to learning, he does not view himself as an Adam Chashuv.